to Shattering Myths. We have Rob on the line, wanted to talk about the great Hadron Collider, the super collider in CERN, Switzerland, and his concerns over it. What in particular concerns you about it, or is it just a fascination?
I'm really not concerned about it, even though they've improved it and they're running it wide open all the way to Yom Kippur or whatever, to September, I guess.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They're claiming they've already, you know, created antimatter in a small amount, but they're claiming now that they're going to have pounds of it. Regardless of what that means, I don't know.
I really have a tough time with that too. The problem with the way with antimatter is that scientists say that for the universe to have come into existence the way it did, there had to be a fairly equal amount of matter and antimatter, with matter being ever so slightly dominant, and that antimatter is assimilated in the presence of matter, and that today it's very difficult to have antimatter exist because its life is so short in the presence of massive amounts of matter.
Right.
And therefore it doesn't seem plausible to me that you could that even in a, you know, an Earth that is incalculable in terms of its weight when just compared to a pound, I'd be really surprised if they could keep a significant amount of antimatter in that state and put it in a symbol collection
right.
spot.
It's really hard for some reason, but regardless,
yeah.
I don't know if that has anything to do with, you know, we are winding down, aren't we, to the...
Yes, of course. You know, man is so interesting in science that like, for example, when man discovered that the universe was created and that there was a Big Bang that started it, man said, okay, now we don't need God anymore. We've explained how the universe came into existence. And yet all man did is ascertain that what Yahweh said was accurate in the beginning of his Torah. It's like mapping the human genome, you know, that we've now mapped the DNA of an individual, and when using supercomputers. Well, to be able to state the DNA, just to say this is the sequence of the DNA in one human, is like saying, I can replicate the letters in Moby Dick. Okay. Well, it's another story entirely to write Moby Dick. And we're not writing the DNA code. We're just simply saying this is what the DNA code says. And then even then, it's another leap, even a dimensional leap, if you will, an infinite leap from Moby Dick, writing Moby Dick. You know, from replicating the letters of Moby Dick is easy. Writing Moby Dick takes imagination, but now you go one step further and creating Moby Dick, you know, a life form, and then going back on that and saying, oh, create the environment that the life form can exist in. And, you know, so us being able to say that this is the DNA for the whale and creating the universe and the life in that whale, you know, we are presumptuous when we say we don't need God anymore because we've explained it.
Right. Well, so we got Yahweh on the seventh dimension. He obviously has the ability to bring himself down to our dimension himself.
Yeah, all he can do in our dimension, and something that is makes a great deal of sense, is he can set apart a aspect of himself to enter our dimension. The entirety of Yahweh cannot enter our dimension because he is seven dimensional, which means he is infinitely greater than 3.5 dimensions. I mean, infinitely greater. His very nature is so many, you know, it's kind of infinity times infinity times infinity, so much greater that it is not physically possible, not even remotely so, for all of God to enter a dimension. The best he can do is take a hugely diminished aspect of himself and set it apart to enter our dimension. It's a little like Walt Disney can write a dialogue box and draw himself in to the two-dimensional world of Mickey and Minnie Mouse. That's the best he can do. He can't become two-dimensional. So, you know, it's absolutely impossible for Walt Disney to become two-dimensional and interact with the mooses that he created.
Right. Well, it appears to me they're using this machine to try and tap into the next dimension. I mean, that's what it appears to me that they're doing. But
yeah, you know, we as humans, we really haven't gotten beyond four dimensions. And even in four dimensions, quantum physics doesn't work in a four-dimensional construct. You know, quantum is a three-dimensional construct with gravity being a force as opposed to it being a dimension as it is in relativity. As a three-dimensional construct, we are incapable, as we are currently, of going into a fourth dimension. Something has to be done to us profound. To transform us so that we can go into another dimension.
Right.
Well, with time being a dimension, we're that's often said that we're in three and a half dimensions.
I think we are, and I don't know if it's three and a half but it's 3 point something. Correct.
Yeah.
If in fact time is a dimension, you know, there are. The idea of time being a dimension is a theory that has considerable credibility behind it. And I personally think that time is a dimension, and I think it's the fourth dimension. And string theory seeks to explain the universe as it is, with 96% of it beyond our observations, by explaining it through additional dimensions. I mean, that's the basis of string theory is exactly what we're talking about, is the necessity of adding dimensions beyond time to explain the universe as it exists.
Sometimes I think it's almost folly for us, you know, barefoot peasants to dabble in this stuff too much because it's so hard to really grasp. Like, you know, some
correct.
People start talking about the fifth dimension as the Higgs field and all that. Number one, I'm convinced that Yahweh is transcendent of all the dimensions he creates, because to put him within a dimension is to contain him. And it's simply beyond our comprehension to grasp the transcendental nature of Yahweh's existence, because when we try to envision the absence of dimensionality, all we end up with is a geometric point.
Yeah.
And Yahweh certainly isn't a geometric point. But he is, like, in my thinking, he created the dimensions as a framework into which to put the rest of his energetic and material creation.
But you have to be beyond the dimensions you create.
Right, exactly.
So let's say the universe is a six-dimension construct. He has to be beyond the sixth dimension. His nature is such. Yeah, his nature is such. His formula is such. His communication with us is such that it logically seems that we would find him, and we will find him in the seventh dimension. Now,
we'll find a different manifestation of him.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's
I don't know if he exists outside of the seventh dimension. If there's any
if he existed before him, if he exists within a dimension, then he is contained within something.
I think
he created the container. He isn't contained within it. He created the containers.
Yeah, and I'm not sure dimensions are really a container, because all, with exception of the point, dimensions are infinite. And so other than the point, all dimensions are infinite. So there really is again, we're getting into the very thing that concerned about, which is trying to understand that which is difficult for us, stuck as we are in three and a half dimensions. But dimensions are infinite. So what you have is, the three-dimensional universe that we understand is infinite, and the four-dimensional universe that we can at least theorize on based upon what Einstein has said is infinite times infinite. In fact, it's infinite in all four dimensions. And so the seventh dimension would be infinite in seven dimensions. So it's not a container.
Just to illustrate my emphasis on being folly about spending too much time and energy speculating on these matters. Like right now, I'm sitting here up to my elbows in rabbit poo. I'm cleaning a rabbit cage. Okay.
This is
the mundane.
That's real.
The mundane.
That's very real.
Life.
Yeah, that's
okay?
Real.
Life is about me. It's about changing diapers, cleaning rabbit cages, changing rabbit boxes. Getting the oil changed in my car, getting my car through inspection.
Yeah. But the mundane is essential. That's why Yahweh said to Adam that you're going to be engaged in the mundane. Because it is in the mundane that we gravitate to an appreciation of the things of Yah. I mean, it's of working, of serving, of contributing, of life, of and all of the support that goes into to life and into to living, and just the discipline of doing what needs to be done.
Right, right.
And because it needs to be done. Right.
Yeah. I rescued this little creature I would never have chosen, for example, to have a rabbit. But it's this little creature, and she's part of my world, my sphere, my relationships. You know, there isn't a whole lot there in terms of intelligence and communication, but
right.
You have the whole pet thing on her. And this is and this is part of the mundane. It's a good, you know, having a pet and human relationships. This is all the stuff of life. And I was much more interested in Yahweh teaching me about relationships and making my world work in the mundane sphere of life than I am about speculating about whether or not being able to say ACGT or adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine can make me a god, or finding a god particle can, you know, well, all that stuff. I have precious little time for all that.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. Science is so focused on itself having a religious manifestation that this boson-Higgs particle, they want to call the god particle. And it's because they want science to have the same affinity and appeal that religion does, and they want the same sense of believing that exists in religion, which is why they call it a God particle.
God.
Right.
He is God, knowing God particle.
Yeah, and it's just one of the many building blocks, and there will be others even smaller. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation here with both Rob and with Glenn. Rob, do you think that it is valuable to speculate, as we have several now programs about dimensions and what Yah was offering us via the covenant in terms of increasing us, multiplicities increasing us, this idea that he's going to transform us into energy, into light, and then empower us, that having a sense of dimensions beyond the 3.5 that we witness is helpful in understanding what our inheritance is going to be, or is it just way too esoteric and speculative to be of value?
I mean, it may be too much for some, but I like envisioning the future myself, so I pretty much, I don't know, it's part of me getting to know him, I guess. I want to know every aspect about him, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't dwell on it, obviously. But my whole point was about bringing CERN up anyways, was not necessarily to talk about CERN, but just to recognize that it's there and what they're trying to do. But
yeah.
The fact of the matter is, I mean, we can thank them because they say they created the web, World Wide Web, in 1989. I'm not sure how accurate that is.
Yeah, that was a collaborative effort. UCLA was at the forefront of it. General Electric was at the forefront of it. The U.S. Department of Defense was also engaged in it. It was a means to have research institutions, companies making military hardware, and the government be able to communicate other than, you know, phone and the systems that existed at the time. And so it was created as a communication medium as so many things do, that grew out of America's war desire to make things that blow things up and kill people. And so it was GE as a defense contractor, UCLA as a research institution. In fact, the head of the Air Force's research evaluation team is a professor at UCLA, which is, you know, probably why UCLA was chosen. But those three entities collectively with the CERN team developed the precursor, if you will, to what we call the Internet. I personally look at the Internet as the medium that Yahweh was discussing when he said that the beneficial message and messenger would be disseminated to the entire world. You know, this program is primarily heard via the Internet. The books yadaya.com and introtogod.org, as well as questioningpaul.com, even prophetofdoom.net, are all communicated via the Internet. And so it is the means by which the entire world can be reached with the truth.
Absolutely. It can also be used for evil, you know.
Well, yeah, it's dominant. The dominant business of the web is pornography.
Yeah.
And the vast preponderance of what's on the Internet is fanning the flames of religion and politics and all of the evil that man has perpetrated. And, of course, it grew out of what I consider to be an evil, the military-industrial complex.
I'm grateful for it because I would have never been able to come to know Yah and become, you know, part of this covenant, this family. But
yeah. It's the reason, yeah, it's the way that we can share what he has to people around the world very effectively, very efficiently, and in multiple layers. Because, you know, I think that there is enormous merit in both the spoken and written word. The written word is vastly more useful as a learning tool. But the spoken word is a more effective medium for communication. So if you want to do your study, reading, for example, yadaya.com or introtogod.org, those are more effective tools for learning. Now, questioningpaul.com at 1,200 pages is a much more effective tool for dispelling all the myths of Christianity, but yet to make introductions, to communicate, most of us are find the spoken word more effective. So both are facilitated by the Internet. So it is indeed a marvelous tool, and it provides access to really most people in the world. You know, there's more smartphones and cellular data access plans than there is population in the world. There's over 7 billion of them. And so the whole world really has access to this. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have both Glenn and Rob on the line. And guys, for me, I like the dimensional discussion. And it's not because I claim that I can envision what it's like to be in the unleashed, if you will, in seven dimensions. But because it is very comforting to me, because it is, it adds a layer of affirmation. It is, as I read Yahweh's promises and the benefits of the covenant, it's what I see. It's what I envision. And for me, it is, I always like to at least ponder what the possibilities are. My mind just likes to go to those kinds of thoughts and places. And to see Yahweh as offering to bring us to him in seven dimensions, and whether it turns out to be more, is really somewhat immaterial because each dimensional climb is infinite. So just being unleashed in the third dimension and the fourth dimension is an infinite increase in where we are. And as I just think of just the fourth dimension, all of a sudden, in the fourth dimension, We have the capacity to explore the entire universe because at its current size and being matter, we have no possibility of even going to the next planet in our solar system, much less going to a different solar system, much less going to a different galaxy.
So we'd have to assume from what we read in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Eliyahu ben Shikar has the ability. He's obviously not a three-dimensional construct,
right?
Right.
No, he is clearly infinite in time, so he is a four-dimensional construct.
At least. Do you think, Yahweh can diminish himself down to actually become...
He doesn't diminish himself. He diminishes a part of himself. That's why it's always referred to as set apart, because God's not going to diminish himself. What he does is he sets apart part of himself and diminishes that aspect of himself.
I guess my point is knowing these different dimensions, because half of your show... Every, 5 days a week is about evil in the world, obviously.
Right.
You got Islam, you got police brutality, which I'm actually a victim of. But regardless, there's all this evil that's going on. And I hate to say this, but evil, me being evil myself, is what brought me to know Yah. Because until I understood the evil that I was dealing with, I couldn't really go any further.
Yeah, and isn't Rob when you look at the Torah, about half of the Torah is presenting the evil that man perpetrates so that we understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as you said, if we don't expose the evil and help people understand that human institutions are evil, they're counterproductive, then it's much more difficult to be open to the truth.
Well, not only human institutions, but fourth dimension constructs are evil too,
That's probably true. That there is evil in the spiritual realm. That's true.
Like one third of the Malak went with.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
We got all these fourth dimensional constructs.
Right.
And apparently they have the ability to come into at least to affect us in some way or another.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's right. They absolutely can. So. You're right. They have, I think once you become a member of Yahweh's family, you are protected from them, at least to a substantial degree. I mean, we found with Yob was obviously part of Yahweh's family, and Yahweh gave Hasatan a limited access for a limited period of time to a limited degree, access to mess with Yob. So that does occur. I think that for the most part, though, that we are protected from as members of the covenant family. There's just so few of us that we're off limits. And Hasatan has lots to work with, so there's no reason really for him to screw around with Yahweh's covenant family.
Protection. I used to think I need to store up weapons. I need to do this. I need to do that.
And all the weapons that you can store up aren't going to do you any good where it matters.
Well, and on top of that, Yahweh lets us know that we're dealing with fourth dimensional constructs that we don't really know a lot about.
That's correct.
Stuck in these third dimension, bodies or whatever, minds and bodies.
Yeah.
I think we need to be aware of the fact that they are out there and real. It's not just a story. I mean, it's,
and I'm happy to realize though that our time of having to expose the harm that they can impose on others is short-lived. We have, at this point, Rob, about 11 more years that we're going to be here engaged in this. And I know, while they exist and they can produce harm, the fact of the matter is that the influence of Hasatan and his demons is pretty limited in terms of my day-to-day life. So I'm fairly content to expose what his minions have done in terms of politics and religion and judicial systems and economic schemes.
That's what got me studying the subject, was because I was thinking, they're killing mass amounts of people. I mean, we do war every day. What would somebody who's in charge of this to allow this to happen? It's inhumane. You know,
right. And what's particularly interesting, of course, is that for years, religion was blamed for most carnage. And religion has seldom, you know, in the case of Islam now, it is a religion that is responsible for the worst carnage on the earth. But for most of mankind's history, it's actually political entities, governments. The Greeks were savages in terms of what they did to in war. So were the Romans, the Carthaginians, mankind, the Persians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians. Mankind's had a long history of political military rampage. Look at the Egyptians. We perpetrate a lot of savagery, of inhumane treatment via politically controlled militaries, and have for a very long time. And while religion is interwoven into that, the primary impetus is not the religion. It's the political entity. And it's men trying to gain more wealth and power and territory for themselves. And it has been the nature of things. And now as you look at the world as it is today, while Islam now is responsible for most of the carnage, the reality is that if you go back over the last 100 years, it's socialist secular humanism. It's that doctrine that has been the most deadly.
I mean, Islam and Christianity both started out with a man being possessed by
correct.
You know.
Yeah, that's true.
A different
that's true.
Construct.
It's absolutely true, and I personally think there is an extraordinarily likelihood that Hadrian was demon possessed.
Absolutely. I mean, anybody
and,
does
right.
this. Even the jihadist over there, whoever can take a knife and cut someone's head off. You know,
I don't think the majority of the jihadists, as savage as they are demon possessed. I don't think there's that many demons in the world. I think there are vastly more jihadists than there are demons. I just think that once the Satan's minions possess someone like Muhammad and Paul and use them to create a popular religion, that religion has its own demonic influence, and you don't have to be demon-possessed to be revolting. And even today, the patriotism that's associated with the military and its justification for killing, and what we say in the name of good, in the name of democracy, in the name of freedom, it's the same kind of demonic influence without being demon-possessed.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's inhumane to me. I don't know how. I don't want to go next door and kill my neighbor. I mean, I know that you don't want to harm people around you.
Right.
You get to the point where you're just slaughtering people. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
I don't know if it conjures up, you know, more of this fourth dimensional energy.
Yeah. You know, you look too at our nation. We justify using our drones to kill, 4,000 or 5,000 religious zealots, all Muslims, of course, around the world. And we think that is in the name of peace. And yet, when I expose and condemn Islam using words, I'm considered hateful. I'm the hate monger because I use words to truthfully expose and condemn the religion. And that's hate mongering. But the President of the United States can order the deaths of 4,000 civilians via drones. And he is a peace advocate and wins the Nobel Peace Prize. Do you think we have a world that's upside down?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the real evil is in layers from the point that if it wasn't for the United States, they wouldn't be over there doing this right now. So really,
To the greatest degree possible, Yahweh was, to the greatest extent possible, Yahweh's testimony. Yahweh's testimony about woe to the United States in Yeshaya 18 and our contribution to the Syrian civil war, how we become the death merchants of the world. We are the catalyst for most of the evil that's being perpetrated in the world today. It's not because America is responsible for Islam, but it's because America is enabling Islam, not only with its invasions and manipulations and and support of the religion, but the fact that we are the supplier of the vast preponderance of the weaponry that Muslims are deploying.
Right. I think the evil goes another layer than what we normally want to think that it is. I think as Christians, yeah, we're brought up to ignore the supernatural. But unfortunately, yeah, I see it all throughout the Torah, and I can't ignore it. It's what, yeah, you know, as a child, it's, yeah, what kept me, you know, interested in it.
Yeah, yeah, that's there's certainly a demonic influence in our world, and that demonic influence is going to get much worse. We are going to see, beginning 11 years from now, we're going to see Hasatan and his most effective minions take a lead role in the last 7 years of human history. It's going to turn out poorly for them. But they're going to take a lot of people down with them.
Damage.
You know, Sheol is going to become a vastly more popular place than it is this currently. No, they're active today. It's the tide has arisen, and the tsunami is about to crash into the shore.
I agree.
Rob, I want to bring the time discussion a little closer to Earth, if we might.
Sure.
In the creation account, where Yahweh does create the earth and the universe, from his perspective as the creator of what he even refers to as the Big Bang, that took 14.7 billion years.
Yeah.
And yet, from the perspective, our perspective here on Earth, where time moves much more quickly, because of the, we're so distant from that amount of energy and velocity, that, you know, 14.7 billion years from Yahweh's perspective, where time slows, would actually be 6 24-hour days. In fact, you do the math, and it's 6 24-hour days is exactly the amount of time that it would have taken to create a universe that, from our perspective, came into being over 14.7 billion years. That's the nature of relativity, and we have the proof from the cosmic microwave radiation that is at 2.73 Kelvin.
Yeah, it was a big step forward when I realized that.
Yeah, at that point, if your chin doesn't drop on the table, then you say, well, that is way too precise, way too profound to have been to be per chance, then you're just not open to evidence and reason. But using the Yahweh's depiction of the universe in 6 days, and that it's a 7-day exercise, that it's 6 days of work followed by a seventh day of rest, we realize that Adam and Chawa were booted from the garden just shy of 6,000 years ago. And that
in a fourth dimension at that time?
I don't. When they were infinite in time while they were there, so whether or not they were able to maneuver in time, I don't know. If they were matter, probably not. But anyway, they were booted from the garden just shy of 6,000 years ago, in 3967 BCE, which is just now some, 2033 will be the end of the ordinary work period. So that's shy of 6,000 years ago. And that we have these mile markers along the way of 40 Yovel of 1967 BCE is when 1968 BCE was no year zero, when Abraham affirmed the covenant with Yahweh, when Yahweh actually took Abraham to see the seventh dimension, if you will. And then you have in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, another 20 Yovel later, Yahweh setting apart a part of himself into our world, diminished for the purpose of fulfilling the first four Moed Mikra to honor the benefits of the covenant. And we are now just a few years away from 2033, which will be 40 Yovel from 33 CE, when he's going to come and fulfill the last two of the Moed Mikra. And part of the timeline fits down to earth because we will enter year 6000 Yah, which begins the seventh millennia of human existence, where Yahweh will celebrate 1,000 years of rest with his creation, where it's going to be 1,000-year celebration of the Shabbat. And using the timeline that he gave us, we know that on our pagan timepiece, that's 2033. That's year 6000, which will commence on, in terms of his return on Yom Kippurim. So we can use time, even as we are stuck in the ordinary flow of it, to understand what's going to happen and when it's going to happen here on this planet, just as we can understand what has happened and how long ago it happened.
Confirms prophecy, basically.
Right. So we know that all of the prophecies that Yahweh discussed regarding Islam and in Israel and the United States and what is going to happen with the Torahless one and how he's going to grow out of an intersection between the empire of Rome and that of Alexander, that collectively we've got now just 18 more years for all of that to play out. 11 years before we start the tribulation and 7 years thereafter. We have 18 years where all of that is going to play out. So we know that indeed this place, this planet, is going to become more and more infected with demonic influence and with evil and human institutions. So Glenn is right. We're not going to change any of that. But we can save individuals from it. We'll be back with you tomorrow.